Welcome to our Conversational Expositions. Right now, we're making our way through the book of Exodus. Here in our video studio, we're going through in greater depth these passages that we've somewhat summarized on Sunday mornings. So here we're taking a look at another piece of the furniture of the tabernacle. You know, we say furniture, not like couches and, you know, coffee tables and such like that, but the articles that were to go alongside the tabernacle in their service. Here in Exodus chapter 27, we have the description of the altar. So just to set everybody's mind back in perspective, Moses is up on Mount Sinai for 40 continuous days, and during that time, God gives him these instructions for the tabernacle and the different articles of the tabernacle. So let's start with it here, verses 1 and 2 of Exodus chapter 27.
You shall make an altar of acacia wood, 5 cubits long and 5 cubits wide. The altar shall be square, and its height shall be 3 cubits. You shall make its horns on its 4 corners. Its horns shall be of 1 piece with it, and you shall overlay it with bronze.
Okay, so what we're talking about is a wooden altar, square, overlaid with bronze, with these horn kind of like things. What's up with the horns at the corner of the altars?
Well, it was around just the, really the... kind of the perimeter of the altar. Mm-hmm. And wasn't it that were on those horns was put the blood of the sacrifice?
Right.
And kind of the symbolizing the atonement.
Okay, the blood would speak of the atonement. Well, but what's the horns speak of in biblical?
Like an idea of strength and yes, power kind of things.
You know, in that sense, because the idea is that the strength of an ox or something like that is expressed out through its horns. Mm. It's sort of the business end of the animal, the part you don't want to hook up with in an angry way.
Definitely.
And so, yeah, this was just sort of ancient Middle Eastern sort of idea of a thing. The pagans had similar representations, so it's not that his God was averse to doing that. So they had this thing with horns at the corner, but then to make an altar, what would you use an altar for? What's the whole point of an altar?
Well, ultimately, it was a place to kill things.
Right.
I mean, it was a killing place specifically designed to offer sacrifices.
That's what the word in the Hebrew suggests, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Killing place. Mm. It's a place of slaughter, a place where sacrifice was made, where the blood of atonement was poured out. You know, later on throughout the book of Exodus, and especially in the book of Leviticus, you're going to see described offering after altar, the peace offering, the sin offering, the guilt offering, the fellowship offering, offering. You know, the altar was where all this took place.
Now, to give the people kind of a general location of it, where would this altar stand?
Well,
would this be in the temple?
Let's talk about a couple things. First, we have sort of a depiction up on our screen of what this might have looked like, the altar itself. This is one artist's description of it. You see sort of the square around it with these horn-like projections coming off on the side. But then in our next depiction, we have sort of the idea of where the altar was in the layout of the tabernacle. So as a person would come through the multicolored gate of the tabernacle, right in front of them would be the altar, and that's where sacrifice was made. The altar stood in between them and the tabernacle, sort of the house of God. So in other words, kind of the idea was that you could not come into the house of God except through the altar and its sacrifice.
And it was visible. Everyone could see it. Everyone could get a look at it and what was going on.
You know, I don't know if our text here says it, but it was on a raised platform. It was raised up for greater prominence. God wanted people to see it, attention drawn to the idea of an altar.
And how big are we talking? You know, a cubit, you know, 5 cubits long, 5 cubits wide, something like, you know, 15.
Okay, now we're going to come back to this a few times, but you guys may know. We don't know exactly how long a cubit was. The standard measurement is that a cubit was from the tip of a person's finger to the elbow.
Okay. And
people say, you know, they take into account people being shorter in the ancient world. They're thinking maybe about 18 inches, half a meter for our metric viewers. They're talking about maybe about 18 inches for a cubit. If that's the case, then basically you got an altar that's something like 7 feet. 7.5 feet square. That's what you're talking about.
So fairly large.
Yeah, it's large. Well, it had to be. Look, without trying to sound gross, buckets of sacrificial blood, you know, tons of sacrificial flesh of animals came through that altar. I mean, that thing was burning hard all the time. It was genuinely a place of sacrifice. And if I could say so, a busy place of sacrifice.
Of course, the New Testament example, of course, is the cross of Christ. That is our ultimate altar.
You know, I tell you what, I love this passage in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 10, where, as I sense it in the book of Hebrews, he's speaking almost in this defiant sense, where he says, we have an altar. That's the idea, the writer of the Hebrews. And you can almost imagine the writer of the Hebrews trying to encourage Christians who have been criticized by perhaps their Jewish friends and neighbors, saying, you guys don't have an altar. You know, we have an altar that functions at the temple on us. And you know, we, under the new covenant, we have an altar. And of course, just like you said, Nate, our altar, it's the cross, that killing place, that place where atoning sacrificial blood was poured out.
But in the same way, I think about Romans 12, where there's the idea like, okay, I beseech you therefore, my brethren, to present your bodies a holy sacrifice.
Living sacrifice. That's right. That's right.
You know? So it's almost like there's this cool, you know, picture there. Old Testament, this altar with the ox and all those that would be burnt. Then we have this idea of the cross being our altar, then the idea like, but we ourselves have to sacrifice a living sacrifice upon the altar.
That's right. We're in that continual place, not to atone.
Right.
Okay, but this kind of gets complicated. But man, I find it fascinating. I find the whole sacrificial system fascinating, just to understand what it was, but also how it points so powerfully to Jesus. And notice one thing: not every offering under the sacrificial system was for atonement. Some of it was for fellowship. Some of it was for thanksgiving. Some of it was for dedication of life. And we think there is one altar for atonement. That's the cross. But there is, in a secondary sense, an altar in the Romans 12, 1 and 2 sense that we come and offer up our lives to God all the time. All right, let's continue on. He talks about some of the accessories for the altar, starting right there in verse 3.
It says, also you shall make it pans to receive its ashes, and its shovels, and its basins, and its forks, and its fire pans. You shall make all its utensils of bronze. You shall make a grate for it, a network of bronze, and on the network you shall make four bronze rings at its four corners. You shall put it under the rim of the altar beneath, that the network may be midway up the altar. And you shall make poles for the altar, poles of acacia wood, and overlay them with bronze. The poles shall be put in the rings, and the poles shall be on the two sides of the altar to bear it. You shall make it hollow with boards, as it was shown to you on the mountain, so shall they make it.
Okay, those verses there, verses 3 through 8 of Exodus chapter 27. Did you get a little confused by all that?
I'm thinking
networks and boards and hollow and grates.
Like going to Home Depot, going to the barbecue section, seeing my brushes and my scrapes and my
Well, okay, they needed the very practical implements. What's it described there? Pans, basins, forks, fire pans, all these things, very practical things. I mean, look, there'd be a lot of fat and leftover ash and bone pieces and this and that that you have to sort through.
Plus, how are you going to move all the meat that's on the altar?
You know, again, so it's just very practical implements that they would use. But again, they also say something interesting about this sort of grate system that I find fascinating. Look at it there, and I think we got a graphic for the folks about it. This is how our modeler here sort of decided to depict how the altar was separate from the grate that went with it. And, of course, they would construct it this way so it'd be removable, so that you could clean it out. Yeah. You just imagine this thing would have an enormous amount of ash and bone residue and just gunk that needed to be cleaned out, so they made it separable.
And, of course, it had to be able to be carried everywhere.
That's right. And that's what the poles were for.
Right.
It, even though it was made of bronze, it was marked out as being something notable, something that would be transported as the most glorious articles.
Now you notice here that all these different utensils were made of bronze, and you notice that the altar was made of bronze.
Yes.
What's the significance of bronze in the making of all these different pieces?
Well, let's say, first of all, there's a very practical idea. The fire at the altar burned hot. I mean, you could just imagine how hot it is at your barbecue grill when it flares up. So it's very hot at the altar. Gold would just melt. Silver would just melt. So you needed a metal that had a higher melting point, and bronze or brass would be just that kind of metal. That's one aspect to it. But the other thing is, if you'll notice, and our modeler's depiction of it has it, if we can get the right slide up there. If you take a look at it, our modeler's depiction has the outside of the altar being sort of rough in its texture. I think our viewers can see that. Well, where does that come from? It comes from the idea of where the outward covering for the altar came from. You guys familiar with that story?
Was it something about Aaron's, was it Aaron or was someone kind of rebelling?
Okay, what we're talking about is Numbers chapter 16, the rebellion of Korah.
Korah, that's right.
And these guys wanted to have a priestly service outside of what God had commanded. So part of the priestly service was to come with a censer, sort of a pot filled with incense. What did God tell them to do with those censers from the sons of Korah?
Take them and beat them, right, or something?
Pound them flat and put them on the outside of the altar. I mean, isn't that vivid? Mm. Every time somebody came to the altar of sacrifice, they would see the outside covering of those pounded flat censers of Korah in his rebellion and be reminded, wow, don't rebel against God, don't rebel against his system of sacrifice. Everybody could see it. I find that to be remarkable. Super, super vivid in that regard. So look, the altar speaks to us a lot, doesn't it? This place of sacrifice, of commemorating us to what Jesus did for us. It speaks to us of the cross. It also speaks to us of our daily life of sacrifice and surrender to the Lord. Very important part. And if we got to say, for the common Israelite, this was the most important piece of furniture to them. Could they go inside the tent?
No.
No. They never even saw the golden candlestick, not candlestick, golden lampstand. They never even saw the table of showbread or the other things. They of course, never saw the Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
But the altar, they could come and bring their sacrifice to the altar. Just like we can come, put our trust in Jesus Christ. So that's great. We'll wrap this one up. In our next one, we'll move on through in this next section through Exodus chapter 27 and continue on.